Welcome to Two Men in the Middle, where two men in the middle of the heartland of America talk about politics, international affairs, and current events. I'm Brandon Kinnig.
I'm Craig Huey.
Craig, so a week has passed by. Many topics to tackle in terms of what's going on with the presidential race and the Trump trial process. But let's start, right now, I think, with Trump and his financial difficulties and the courts and how that's all being impacted. So I think number one, we saw his Truth Social media company.
Did you call your Schwab account guy or get online or whatever, and Brandon immediately calculate how much money you could throw into Truth Social?
I did not. I did not take advantage of that GameStop opportunity. But it was acquired by a larger media company, and it's now become this conglomerate being traded openly on the stock market, on the exchange. And remind me what the valuation is, because it's just some insane,
so at one point on Monday or Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday when this came out, I had heard that it had hit $17 billion and the stock price was somewhere around $78 a share. I've heard anywhere that Trump owns anywhere from 60% to 90% of that company, and that means he owns somewhere around 70 million shares of Truth Social. I did check on True Social today. It ended up at like 61, 62, something like that. So it has declined about 12% in price from Tuesday when it hit the open market.
Okay. Well, and that's good to know. So because this, again, represents the memification of, some of these high-profile business maneuvers. Because those that know the record of True Social financially, I mean, this – you said it offline, but I think 3 million was their...
for their total time in existence, which I think they came in existence like right after like 2021, maybe sometime in that calendar year. They've made about $3 million in revenue, which is basically non-existent. And I think they've lost, they've lost about $50 million a year.
Right.
So,
I mean, there's no valid rationale for valuing them at that level.
The only value they have on it is Trump is on the platform. I think he has somewhere between 60 and 70,000 followers. It's been a long time since I've logged in or looked at Truth Social, just because there's just nothing.
That's
there.
Minuscule as far as a social platform goes.
To call it a fledgling social media site would be a gift to the word fledgling, I guess.
Yeah.
It has no traction. It has no advertisers, and it has very, very little value.
Okay, so knowing that, what real monetary impact does this have for Trump? These aren't like real assets that he can leverage to pay, pay off his legal fees in the short term. I mean, he can't just immediately.
I don't think so, because number one, he can't touch the stock for 6 months unless the board of Truth Social votes that he can. Brandon, I've heard there's 7 members of the board. Just take a guess who a few of them are.
I mean, these are going to be, kind of right-wing provocateurs.
Well, you'd start with Trump's kids. They're both on it. Devin
Nunes
is on
the former
it.
Congressman from California.
So basically, if he wants to exercise those options, he can. If you know anything about the stock market, and certainly I would not present you and I as anybody who should give anybody individual stock tip advice.
Financial advice on this program.
But if you know how to short a stock, that's what you're going to want to do. Because Trump now is caught in this kind of catch-22 that if the board lets him have access to those shares before the 6 months, well, number one, no bank or no financial institution is going to let him loan against that because the stock is so volatile.
Right.
I mean, Bezos gets away with this because of the stability of the Amazon stock. He's able to borrow billions. We've talked about that.
But there's a history there too. That's very
absolutely
different. Yeah.
That's not a sign to Trump because of just the lack of value that's created by Truth Social. So I don't think he'll be able to get access to that stock early. And even if he does, I don't think he'll be able to turn that into actual cash that then he can use within the campaign or use on his legal fees. I mean, the definition of a pump and dump on stock is exactly what this is. And you mentioned the GameStop kind of memification of this. Larry Kudlow on Fox, on a Fox financial show.
I saw this
was
ridiculous.
Asking the guest, hey, have you got in on this Truth Social thing yet? And almost shaming people into not buying or not putting money into Truth Social.
The grift continues.
Charlie Kirk talked about this is your way to stick it to the Dems again, or the Libs, or whomever that you want to stick it to, as a way of supporting Donald Trump and as a way of again, showing his ability to overcome any situation that is thrown at him.
Yeah, let's be clear. This is about sending a message and indicating your grievance rather than making a sound financial investment.
It's no different than donating $50 or $100 to him or whatever it is directly. But I've not seen anybody who I would say that was taking this topic seriously. And I think Larry Kudlow is not taking this seriously. Charlie Kirk doesn't take this seriously. Anybody with any financial background or financial advice as part of their profession,
no,
they're all running away from this as quickly.
Yeah,
as
none of the serious players in the market. So, but what Trump needs and needs quickly is cash. So he had the judgment against him in the New York fraud case, where the bond, I should say, that he had to pay, and that was reduced now to $1.75 million. There was nobody that would loan to him when it was.
$400 million.
So, $1.75 million. Now, has that been paid?
It's $175 million.
$175 million. Yeah. Thank you. $175 million. I believe that's been paid. So he was able to.
He got a 10-day extension on that too.
Okay.
So he's got till the end of next week to come up with that. Now, Trump kind of laughed it off, like, I got that cash in my couch cushions.
He did. He was being very cocky about it.
He had to get a bond for the E. Jean Carroll $91 million.
Ah, that's a good point, yeah.
So this does make this more, this makes this more doable, but your guess is as good as mine of how Trump comes up with this money. I don't think he has the $175 in cash. And we know now he doesn't have the hundreds and hundreds of millions, I don't believe, in collateral in the equity in his buildings, or they won't accept that equity in his buildings for
no.
collateral.
And that's a key thing we need to remind people of, is all of his wealth is caught up in his properties and those assets. Those are not liquid assets. They can't be turned around quickly enough. And because many of them have been overvalued, it's would be a very slow process to selling those off and recouping the massive amount of money needed to pay off these bonds.
And you'd have to sell those off at fire sale prices.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't get the value with it that you need. So somehow the Republican Party has convinced itself that business finances and real estate finances can be so complicated they cannot be understood. The first time I heard this was with the Hunter Biden thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, these 30 shell companies. I mean, nobody can figure this out. I'm pretty sure an accountant could probably work through that. One of the things that makes any time you deal with Trump more complicated is the layer upon layer upon layer of ownership, sublease. I don't own a part of that. I own a piece of that. Then I've subleased that out to somebody else and there's a bank involved.
Right.
It is complicated to... Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not like, oh, there's Trump Tower. Trump owns 100% of that. He owns it free and clear. You're just dealing with him and the Trump organization when it comes to the finances.
No.
These are things that are pretty complicated. But I think what we're finding out is when you start stripping all of this away, Trump doesn't own a lot of this.
He does not.
And he doesn't have a lot of equity in these buildings.
The only – and again, outside of like the properties, which he's had a very mixed – to say best, probably poor record when it's come to his properties. He's had to file bankruptcy a number of times.
Multiple times.
You know, major losses. You know, most of his income had been derived from licensing. A lot of those products have failed. And then his biggest financial boon was The Apprentice, because that's where he made a lot of cash and did very well. And the irony of The Apprentice was that was all a facade. It was built around this caricature of this great, fantastic businessman that never existed. But that's really what brought him in money.
And that's a great point. His business, his properties weren't bringing in cash that he needs on a day-to-day to show the lifestyle of a billionaire, which is what he wants to project. The Apprentice really is what kept him cash flush.
Yes.
And when that went away, his cash situation changed dramatically, it feels like.
That was a lifesaver for him in many respects, and I always go back to this, but you know, in some ways, I think we have Mark Burnett to thank for Trump being president, because sure, without The Apprentice, he wouldn't have had the national exposure. He wouldn't have become this popular phenomenon. This mindset that he is so successful came from The Apprentice primarily. If you go back to like the 80s and early 90s,
he was a joke.
He was a joke. People didn't take him seriously. People saw his comments and, you know, he talked about how rich he was and people would laugh him off. But The Apprentice is what changed all that.
And you mean to tell me Mark Burnett couldn't put together a 20-minute reel of Trump being the most awful human being on the planet?
Oh, those tapes
and
exist.
End his career whenever he wanted
to. Oh, easily he could have.
Brandon, so half the people think the reduction in bond, and let's remember what Trump is actually putting up. This isn't a bond to keep him out of jail. This isn't a bond to make sure he shows up to the hearing. So there are no, you know, when we typically think of bond or bail, we think of something that makes sure you're going to show up to the courthouse when your trial is. That's not what this is. This is the judgment's already been made against him. He has to prove he has the money to pay it out before he can appeal.
Correct.
So this reduction from $500 million to $175 million was done by the appellate division, and they trimmed it down to $175 million, which is a really good indication. That's probably on appeal what the judgment's going to be pared down to.
Yeah.
Do you fall in half the country? And I have a group of friends that are like, this is just shows the rot in the American legal system. This is all unfair. And this is just another example of rich people and Trump in particular, all kind of skating the law and getting by and getting away with something. I just don't fall into that category. I'm not sure how they got the $350 million penalty. That was the initial penalty. And then the interest accrued on it to get it over $400 or $500 million. I don't know who came up with that number. I don't know how they calculated damages to be that high. And it feels like this is just a preview. So if you're mad at the judgment, get ready, because they're going to knock the overall judgment price down significantly.
They are, yeah. And I still think this is still a sizable judgment. And so that's why, I mean, there's appeals like this all the time and reductions in bond amounts, especially of this size. So I don't think this is necessarily a lifeline to Trump. I think 175 is still going to be a pretty significant hit to him.
Yep.
We know that from the E. Jean Carroll case, coming up with a $91 million bond. So, you know, we shouldn't think that somehow, like, he's just skating by, because he's not. Like, he's still facing consequence for this. This is still going to hurt. And at the end of the day, this is still impacting his ability to fund his presidential race, because so much of his intake is going towards legal costs, attorney fees, and these bond judgments.
So the one company, there was a company that he'd worked with before, I think, that gave him the $91 million for E.J. Carroll. I don't think there's an option of going back to it and hitting him up for another.
No, I don't think that's an option.
Mil. So it'll be interesting to see what he does to get this bond, because Trump's made it very clear, I've got this cash laying around. Well. Let's
he talks a lot.
Let's see it. Also, too, I think Trump's lawyers have had to have told him, dude, this is not getting wiped out. It's going to not be $500 million, but yeah, $150 to $200 million is what you're going to be fined. I think Trump is starting to realize that, starting to realize how difficult that's going to come up with. And yeah, he has to have this money by I think next Friday. They gave him 10 days to do it. I still think he'll struggle to come up with the $175 million.
And I mean, all of this has been impacting his campaigning capability, because he hasn't been out on the campaign trail in a while now.
I mean, 12 days he sit between rally or whatever Trump calls a campaign event.
Yeah, whatever passes.
Who knows these days. Trump also got some bad news in his Alvin Bragg trial. That's actually going to go forward.
April 15th. So that is the first court date for trial that's actually going forward, just a couple weeks. And he had a gag order just recently issued against him.
Oh.
So he, again, can't shut his mouth and was saying stuff about the judge's daughter.
Yeah, that's a real way to endear the judge to your cause.
And this gets back to the point that, like, his attorneys can't control him. They can't seem to impart upon him, like, how to behave. And so it's inevitable that this was going to happen.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Andrew McCarthy is my conservative law guy. And he did really good for me with over January 6th and all of the post-election stuff, understanding what was possible, what is not possible. But this is where people, I think, get yourself into your small information bubble. I liked what Andrew McCarthy was saying about Trump in his post-election court case stuff and how it was going to end up, because I agreed with him. Now we switched over to this, these are these court cases. I disagree a lot with what Andrew McCarthy is saying, but it's important to find people like that and kind of latch on to those opinions. What Andrew McCarthy is saying is any trial, even this one, which most people think is kind of bullshit, where it's this old case that they shoehorn some federal thing to make a state felony or whatever it is, this trial is going to be devastating to Trump.
Oh, yeah. And Stormy Daniels apparently is testifying. So
Michael Cohen's testifying. Yeah. I mean, he's going to have to sit there for 4 weeks during this trial where all kinds of bad, bad stuff is said about him. Things that people don't know, things that people aren't going to like. I mean, I'm disappointed that especially the January 6th trial seems to have been co-opted and snagged by the Supreme Court. But any trial is going to have a huge impact on Trump's reelection bid. Yes. I think we're going to start seeing that next month.
Yeah, no, I agree completely on that. So, yeah, it is devastating. We're seeing one trial go forward. It'll be very interesting to watch the Supreme Court this term because of that blockbuster ruling on the immunity case, which will be the trigger for being able to move the January 6th trial, Judge Chotkin in D.C.
Yeah.
So that's going to be critical. We have the Mar-a-Lago case, which the documents case, which keeps getting postponed.
Yeah.
And that is frustrating beyond belief because that's one of the most clear-cut.
Seems to be.
I mean, cases like I don't see how he comes out of that without a guilty verdict. But also, I am extremely upset with this particular judge, Eileen Cannon, who has very little experience on the federal bench, let alone like a trial of this magnitude involving national security classified documents. You have judges who usually oversee these cases who have decades and decades of experience in this area, and she has none, and she's only been a judge for a hot minute. And for those that don't recall, she was appointed as a judge by Trump after he lost the November election in 2020. So, yeah. And then by luck of the draw, she gets chosen to be...
There's only two federal judges, I think, in Southern Florida or something. So
yeah,
it was just the luck of the draw that you got her.
Well, and so it was also brought up... So George Conway on one of the Bulwark podcasts mentioned she's over here in Fort Pierce, Florida, like out kind of up north, like middle of nowhere. Like, she's not even in Miami, so she can't. She's not conferring with judges, attorneys, specialists that have, you know, experience, you know, in this type of law. She's kind of on an island by herself already, based on geographically where she is. And then she keeps making very bizarre decisions and announcements. And for those that don't remember, she got shot down early in 2022, summer of 2022, when she attempted to appoint a special master to oversee the documents case. And she was overruled by the Court of Appeals very swiftly and in very unforgiving terms. And since then, she has just added delay upon delay. She has attempted to have prosecutors actually publish names of witnesses. She wants them to make evidence public that for obvious reasons they don't want to and is not standard in this type of case. And then the most recent weird decision was the request to issue two sets of jury instructions, which again is not really heard of. So it'll be interesting to see how Jack Smith fights back against this, and because I don't think he's going to go along with that. I'll probably ask her to reconsider. If she doesn't, you know, there's a lot of discussion like where does this get to the point that a replacement is requested? Because that's possible. And I will say that I think if she keeps going down this direction where she keeps making these types of decisions, it does provide the evidence needed to replace her. So it's just a matter of if she continues down this road or if she seems to kind of start to stabilize and oversee this case with, as you would expect the judge to.
Because I think what's going to happen is the Bragg case starts in 2 weeks, April 15th. It's going to run, they think, about 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
So my assumption is a whole bunch of evidence is going to come out on that, like in every trial. There's things that are going to damage Trump. So this is widely considered the weakest of the four cases. Brandon, if we get through this case through April and Trump is convicted, and let's say he's placed on probation, he's not going to jail.
He's not going to jail.
He's placed on probation or something. And his popularity in some battleground states takes a 5-point dip. I mean, at that point, that's an indication that as these bigger cases come, especially the documents case and the Jan 6 case, they are canceling then, right? Those would be considered.
Yes.
If those trials
the
get
heavy
in,
risk
and the amount of evidence that's going to come out, especially in the sixth one, he's toast.
And because I will say we've discussed this before, and regardless of what people think about the polling, you know, one thing the polling has been consistent on is there's a sizable segment of the public that says if Trump is convicted, that they would reconsider their vote for him. They would not vote to support a convicted felon. And so that's what I think has his team most in fear. I mean, clearly that's part of the delay strategy as well, is knowing that how that would impact the electorate.
But now we get to put that to a test.
Yeah.
Because my guess would be 50% of those folks would say, oh, this is that Bragg one. This is that weird one in New York that's 5 years past its statute. Isn't this the one with that porn person in it? Okay. I think if that comes to pass, that this conviction damages him, there's two signals that go out. One to the Republicans is you're in trouble. We're in a lot of trouble. And then the Democrats are going to have to make a decision. And this sounds shitty, but if I'm the king of the Democrats, hey, if we can't get that 1-6 case to go in time, we're just going to leak it to the media. We're not going to let that sit before the election.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Because
all
you
the
know,
evidence, it's coming out somehow.
Because if Trump is elected, the case
he'll
dies.
Kill it. Yeah.
It's dead.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a fan of that, but I think in this case, you could make an argument that that is appropriate. That if the 1-6 case doesn't happen before the trial, just they're going to start leaking massive amounts of evidence.
Extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures.
Ugh. Is that where we're at with Trump?
I feel like it is, yeah. I mean, again, there's a lot that's coming down to bear. And so there are a lot of decisions politically, tactically, strategically that are going to have to be made in a very condensed time frame.
I got some feedback from a listener that in this iteration of the podcast, it seems like I've become extremely pro-Trump.
Some people have said that. They feel like you and I have traded places, actually.
Now, and that's okay. I accept that feedback because I have not become pro-Trump, but I'm not going to be blind to Trump the third go around. I think it was G-Dub had the famous phrase, hey, fool me once. Hey, you got me. Fool me twice. Stop that. And third time, stop booing me or whatever. Hey, twice I've fallen for this with Trump. 2016, there's no way he can win. 2020, he's going to get blown out. I'm not making that mistake again in 2024. Yes, he lost in 2020, but he increased his vote percentage with almost every single category across the board. Brandon, I thought that was going to be impossible. I'm not going to get stuck flat-footed again in 2024 if Trump wins re-election, especially if he wins re-election against the most historically unpopular president in my lifetime.
Right. I mean, that is a valid point. Like, we can't continue to underestimate Trump and just write him off and think that somehow a 50% plus one majority are going to realize that he's, let alone understand the electoral math that needs to be taken into account as well. That you have to get to 270, and that once again, we're going to have, you know, five or six states in this country decide the future of not only our country, but the world, essentially. I mean, if you're one of those voters in those five or six states, you have an outsized impact over you, I, and most other Americans.
And I found myself falling into the exact same cycle. You know, the first time it was in 2016, just pick one of the ridiculous statements he's made. Mexicans coming across the border. Just pick one. And you're like, well, that's it, right? Then his entire presidency was the same thing. Well, this has got to be it. You know, this is so ridiculous and so past the pale. Well, of course, this is gonna. And then there was the sixth. Well, nobody can recover after that, right? That was unique. Well, that certainly, none of that has happened. None of that has happened. So if you're not taking the approach with Trump the third time around, that he is the most viable candidate to win the presidency, you're just being delusional at this point, is my opinion.
Right. And I think that, you know, he did increase his raw vote count each time. He has yet to be able to win the national popular vote.
Yep.
But as we know, that doesn't matter.
Don't
I mean,
matter
he can put
bit.
Together a coalition that wins the Electoral College, and so that's where we're at. The Republicans have not won the national popular vote since 2004. But, you know, that again, that doesn't prevent them from winning the presidency.
Brandon, if I just – okay. Somebody called you and said, I heard your podcast. We love it. We want you. We're dumping that other guy, and we're sticking you with Ronna Romney McDaniel. And you two – 2 to 3 times a week are going to do a podcast that we're going to pay you enough money that you quit. You can quit your job if you want, and you could just do this political stuff full time if you like. Are you signing that contract?
Well, it depends on how much money. No, I mean, I'm tempted to say hell no, because if, again, the difference between being on the other end of the microphone with somebody like Ronna is that you have no idea what her core beliefs are.
No.
I mean, you're going to be debating somebody whose, you know, musings on observations on anything at the moment are going to be based on what's in her best interest and financially in her interest. And so, like, how is that even like a honest, legitimate discussion? I mean, you could have faith in that. There's no trust there.
And isn't that what Chuck Todd said last Sunday, I think, or 2 Sundays ago or whenever on Meet the Press, where he's like, hey, whoever pays Ronna is what her opinion is.
That's exactly
so
right.
When she comes on here, we just have no idea who or what she's representing.
And she said so as much. I mean, she said that she defended herself very pathetically by saying she was taking one for the team.
Just taking one for the team, Brandon.
That, so, again, indicated that, you know, her thoughts, her opinions are for sale based on who she's working for. And, you know, it wasn't just a matter of going along with the big lie. Like, she hired attorneys. She tried to help overturn results state by state, get legislatures in Wisconsin and Michigan to overturn their outcomes for Biden. So it's beyond the pale. It's not simply a matter of even somebody who's dishonest and not truthful. It's somebody who had a very lead role in trying to undermine our democracy. And so in many aspects, that's unforgivable.
It's very difficult to look at the MSNBC nighttime lineup and have any sympathy for them. Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes, Ari Melbert, and then Joe Scarborough and all of them. They all had a little mini meltdown over hiring her. 99% of the time, I am on the side of the company and I'm on the side of management, because I hate every single employee and you just want to fire every single person that's ever worked for you. But I think they have a point here.
Yeah. I mean, and management should have known that there'd be this backlash, and for them to not anticipate it also shows how short-sighted that they were, and that this wouldn't have become an issue. And a couple days and she's out. So it shows you how bad of a decision this was.
While it is ridiculous for Nicole Wallace to call MSNBC sacred airways, her part of the rant where she says, I can't let a person sit here with an MSNBC badge on, my team badge, and say the stuff she's going to say. That I kind of agreed with.
Yeah.
The whole breathless, oh my God, she's invading this sacred space. That's all a bunch of dumbness that's made for TV.
Right.
But having her sit there as an NBC News employee, I think they're right in saying that's something we can't support that.
Yeah, that is a bridge too far. And I think as a mainstream news organization, you have a responsibility to maintain some degree of credibility. And by hiring somebody like that, you forfeit that. And it just adds to the overall distrust in media by hiring somebody who just is so willing to sell, you know, their soul essentially for money.
We talked about this before, but Brandon, why do you think Fox News didn't hire her?
Oh, gosh. You know, it might have been, you know, a tiny little judgment against them.
And they're still in the middle of Smartmatic.
Yeah.
Boy, that probably would have helped. I mean,
Smartmatic,
yeah, that
case is continuing. That hasn't been
resolved. That's still going on.
I forgot about that.
They must want something. I don't know why Dominion got settled, seemed like really, really fast.
Very quickly, yeah.
And this one seems to be going on and on.
Taking so long, yeah.
But Dominion 2 is a much smaller company than Smartmatic.
It is.
So maybe there's just more money involved and more to talk about.
That could be.
You want to play I Never? We talked about this warming up, that the last week has been so confusing you can just look at what's happening on the political throughout the complete political spectrum. And it's like, I've never seen that before.
Never would I ever have thought that I would have seen a presidential candidate hawking American Bibles for $59.95.
Here's how you know that's really, really bad. And here's how you know, I think, that's going to be over very, very quick. Even the folks out on the real, real grifty edges were like, yeah, we're not talking about that.
Yeah, the reaction has been very strong and almost universally. And there's been a cadre of leading Christian ministers and pastors who have come out very forcefully against this and says it makes a mockery of Christianity. And this is this, you know, it completely blurs the lines between politics and sales and religion, essentially. And I mean, there's very few words to say about it. I mean, this is a Bible that also included the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, mm-hmm. like within a Bible, like again, has mm-hmm. no place there.
Got the American flag embossed on it.
Doesn't it have the lyrics of Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA inside it?
Why wouldn't it?
Yeah. And only Bible endorsed by Trump. You know, none of the others are, just this one.
The Quran, you know, that's not endorsed by Trump. This is the only religious founding document I think he's ever endorsed.
So we had Trump, you know, release those NFTs, is that right? The trading cards. Yeah. We had the Trump sneakers not too long ago, a couple months ago, and now we have the Trump Bible. You know, it's hawking one ridiculous product after the next.
I am not a Christian. I am not a believer. I do have a pretty good knowledge and understanding of Christianity and religions in general, because mm-hmm. it's a fascinating topic. If I am a Christian, I am outraged by this. How dare you make Christianity so small to think that this is American? This is an American thing?
Right.
You shove your founding documents and your Constitution in the Bible, like you're linking this, that America invented this. You have no fucking understanding of Christianity at all, religion's place in the world. And this is probably...
If you're a true believer, it comes across as sacrilegious.
Gross.
Yeah,
just unbelievable. I had to say, I thought we'd hit the bottom with the gold sneakers. Nope. There's always another one to hit.
It did remind me, there was a phenomenon, I don't know if you remember this, sporadically at some of his rallies going back to 2020. I think it happened 2021, 2022, where some of the like true MAGA believers would actually bring Bibles for him to sign on the campaign trail. And again, there were a lot of Christian leaders who spoke out at that time saying how appalling that was, because having a politician sign a Bible.
If you're a Christian and you want to vote for Trump, just do it. You don't have to pretend that Trump is somehow down with you, with your religion, participates in Christianity, and religion or Christianity is part of his core.
No.
It just makes you look kind of dumb while Trump's out doing his things.
Yeah, no, completely.
What's next, Brandon? You're in digital marketing. What hip, if you had to make a product recommendation to Donald J. Trump, what would that be?
Well, you have to go with something novel that he hasn't already tried to hawk, you know, because he's done Trump Steaks, wine,
universities, those are all out. Vodka. Right. That's real popular. Celebrities boozing. Trump vodka, that's already failed. And Trump's a teetotaler, so that's out of the picture.
Has he done Trump cigars? Is that a thing?
Trump cannabis.
Oh, there you go.
That might be good.
Okay, Trump cannabis, you know, appeal to the, you know, younger folks, so, you know, that would be.
I mean, the first three products that jumped in my mind, I'm not going to say, because they're all horribly racist. But I could see Trump. We get a little more desperate, Brandon, on the Trump side. Who knows what's coming?
He's not
next.
Above desperation. Say that.
I mean, the shoes weren't desperate enough, right? And now he's got to go Bible. Brandon, math and finances aren't my strong point, but at $60 a whack, you're gonna have to sell an awful lot of Bibles to make a dent in what Trump's gonna.
You are,
Trump's
yeah.
Gonna need.
And again, none of these things appear to be working. So those shoes, which started at
$300 or $400,
like pretty quickly, the price got slashed down to $200 and then $100. Like, you know, after the initial buzz about them. So, again, he's throwing anything and everything against the wall, trying to make cash. He has a cash problem, and so that's what this all comes down to.
Well, Laura Trump's got a new single coming out. If she just donated all that money to the RNC, Brandon, they'd just be flush with cash and ready to go.
Looks like she's doing a hell of a job in her new role. Like, I mean...
here's what I count her singing career. It would be like before every podcast, I demanded to sing a song first and made you listen to it and then not cut it and tried to make everybody who would listen to the podcast listen to me sing. That's what Laura Trump's singing career is.
Yeah, that could be excruciating.
Let's talk about the Republicans just as a broader party. I mean, you said it, 19 Republicans Congress. Now have held their Let's hand at Congress and said, I ain't coming back.
Not only that they're not running again, but they are resigning early. They are leaving in the middle of the session this year.
This is another I never.
They're like, I'm done. This. I don't want to deal with this. Like, I have to get out of here. I mean, running for the exits. And many of them are talking to the press about it. People like Congressman Ken Buck of Colorado, who are saying, you know, the environment's toxic. Like, I can't stay here any longer. You know, so it's they are being very direct in their criticism. So that's not helping things. So you are down now to Republicans can only afford to lose one seat or one vote, I'm sorry, on any given bill. You know, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's still small chance, but more likely now than it was 6 to 8 weeks ago that you could have a situation where somebody gets sick, dies, retires, and you have Hakeem Jeffries become speaker before the next election.
Brendan, you have worked on the Hill. You were in a Senate. You were on a senator's staff. So you've been around this. You've seen this. You kind of know how this function. Most of us just have what our corporate experience has been and try to kind of wedge it into this this experience. My guess is Congress and the Hill works very different from even large companies.
Yeah.
And I guess here's my question. It feels like if it goes bad, it goes really bad, really quick. Just how
because there's nobody to step in and put the brakes on everything, right? So you don't have a CEO of Congress. You don't have leadership structure or shareholders who can say, we're going to make a change. You know, we're going to have a vote on that. There isn't that degree of accountability when it comes to what Congress does, typically the majority party. So what you instead tend to see is that you see the spiraling descent. And unless, you know, a large number of Republican members themselves decide to they're not going to deal with this anymore and they're going to take action, like there's no bottom to it. The difference between when I served, which was in the before times, and now is that you had the adults in the room in most of the cases.
Early to mid-2000s, right?
Yeah, I mean, a very different time.
It wasn't long ago, but it might as well be 1,000 years at this point.
Right, and to give people an idea, those were the times when you had, like, John Boehner as Speaker of the House. You had Bill Frist as Majority Leader, Senator from Tennessee, who today would not win a primary. I mean, it's just – I mean, think about this. You have – Marsha Blackburn has Bill Frist's seat in the Senate now. Like, they could not be more different in terms of
governing. And I
guess
what you said is the point where my analogy broke down. There is no boss there.
No.
There is no one that says, you're going to do it this way because I told you you're going to do it this way. And if you don't do it this way, bad stuff's going to happen to you.
You have a speaker currently in Mike Johnson who is terrified of Trump and is taking his orders directly from him. You have a caucus that's in the grip of MAGA. You have a handful of non-MAGA people in those in that caucus who are unwilling to defy their party and really engage in something like a protest petition to the point where it would actually be successful. And so that's where you're stuck. And so now Johnson had to do had to find a compromise when it came to the budget. And now he is facing retaliation from Marjorie Taylor Greene as soon as they return to session this next week.
I think they have to vote on that too, right?
They do,
There has to be. For a couple of days, but they have
there
to
There has
to
be a vote on that,
okay.
Yeah.
And my guess is if I'm the Democrats, I'm not helping shit.
No.
I mean, I'm going to sit here and...
Why would you?
I have 214 votes, and they're all going for Hakeem Jeffries. We're not swinging a deal with you, and we are not bailing you out of shit.
Why would you attempt to do that again? I mean, we've been through this saga before. I mean, the Republicans need to own the dysfunction that they have and the fact that they can't control their party and that they have, you know, batshit crazy people like MTG who, you know, won't even help pass a budget without retaliation.
I read an article, I think it was on Fox this week, where Mike Johnson said God has spoke to him personally and told him to be ready to assume the role of Moses.
Yes, he said that at a speech in D.C. A couple of months ago.
So I've already said that, you know, I grew up Catholic. I'm currently a non-believer. Mike Johnson's level of religiosity, if that's a word, is starting to make me baseline uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, he's not only an evangelical, but he is someone who has this approach where he basically thinks Christians need to take the reins of government, yeah, that they need to lead on the policy front in accordance with Christian ideals. So, you know, you can call that Christian nationalism or Christian nationalism light, but that is, again, very different than what we've seen with members of Congress and people in government who just happen to be Christian, who, you know, basically govern according to norms, versus those who basically think we need to have a Christian philosophy at the root of government at all levels in this country.
And Brandon, if I were making a list of traits, personal traits that I want to see in my politicians, religious is on the list. I think politicians that have a grounding in religion,
there's a value in that.
I think it's extremely valuable. But there's also a point like this where you start talking to God and linking yourself to biblical characters. That makes a huge portion of the electorate very uncomfortable.
Well, then when you're using your religion specifically as a policy tool to the exclusion of those that don't subscribe to it,
yeah,
as a way to marginalize others in the minority who are not of your religion, that's where it becomes dangerous.
Mike Johnson's right to be a believer ends where my right to be an atheist starts. And it feels like that's not the philosophy Mike Johnson has.
No, and I think that's what makes him scary and dangerous, yeah, you know, and puts him on a whole different level than McCarthy, for example, because he comes from a very different background in terms of how he sees his role. And again, Mike Johnson was a lawyer who was coordinating the effort in the House to oppose the certification of the results in 2020. You know, he has a long history of dabbling in politics and saying very extreme things that put him outside of the mainstream on many issues, many social issues. So, I mean, you don't have to go very far at all. I mean, he was actually on the record of wanting to reinstate prohibition if you go back to the late 90s.
So are we next week, are we doing this again? Are we going through the whole vote thing? Is that
deja vu all over again?
I mean,
possibly. Unless there's, again, some type of effort to quash that.
Brandon, and procedurally, I don't know if they can, but if they can, I'm assuming they will. Let's say this goes to a vote. Who are you thinking, Brandon? Who would you like as a Republican? Who do you think is going to step into that?
Who would at this point? Nobody wants to touch on with a 10-foot pole.
No one. Continuing the game of I've never. I've never seen a politician quit, and here we're talking about Mike Gallagher, who's a congressman from Wisconsin.
Young one, too.
Very young. Who not only quit, who said, hey, I'm not going to run for another term. Not only am I quitting, I'm going to strategically quit on a date that absolutely is designed to inflict as much intentional damage on the Republicans in the House as I can. To the point that MTG has gone on Bannon and Hannity and everywhere and said he should get kicked out right now. She's trying to lead an effort to censure him as he walks out the door for what he did in the date. And by choosing to leave in mid-April instead of the beginning of April, basically that seat stays vacant till November.
Yeah.
He took a seat off their majority on purpose.
Sending a very strong message, yeah.
Tell me, Brandon, how does that happen?
I think that happens when you have, you know, again, a small number of people now, dwindling number in the Republican caucus that actually care about governing, and they are extremely frustrated with the most unproductive Congress in history.
True.
They can't get its act together on Ukraine aid, on aid to Israel, on just passing a budget, having these constant budget showdowns, dysfunction, constant speaker votes, and he's doesn't want to put up with it anymore, and he wants to stick it to his leadership in his own party, and that's the best way to do it. He is. If you are that frustrated enough to where you're willing to leave now, I mean, and not even serve out the rest of your term, it's not a bridge too much further to say that, okay, you're going to prevent them from even being able to use whoever replaces you in the near term. And that's what he did. He wanted to send a message, very strong message, and he found a way to do it.
I don't
blame him one bit. I mean, I think that, you know, things have gone so downhill in Congress that those are the only mechanisms left for rational people to say, hey, this isn't normal. And, you know, somebody has to hear this and somebody has to understand that things need to change.
I mean, Trump right now has Johnson in his pocket. Johnson's going to do whatever Trump wants him
absolutely
to do. So he's going to try to hold off as much of an agenda that could possibly help Biden just for sheer political opportunity for Donald Trump. He's also said that in the first 100 days of the Trump presidency, he is eyeing legislation that would fundamentally change some aspects of the country. So every time somebody says it's hyperbole to talk about this next election is the most serious in our lifetime and blah, 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 these little breadcrumbs pop up that, hey, if Trump gets in there, he's planning on doing some shit.
Schedule off.
It's going to
There's
happen.
There's a lot, yeah.
Do you feel as we get closer to the election, some of that will start landing differently? Right now, you can laugh it off a little bit. Mike Johnson thinks he's Moses. Great. What's he going to do in 100 days? Nothing, because the Senate won't pass it and all of that. But there are paths that this isn't a laughable matter.
No. And I think there is a way to string that into a narrative. I mean, the Heritage Foundation actually has a blueprint behind this in terms of filling key appointments within the Trump administration with people who will enact a very specific agenda that is much more aggressive than when Trump came in 2016, because you have people that are saying that, you know, he was slow to act then. So I think there's a way to talk track that, to show that we're talking about changes not only in norms, but in terms of how the government operates and serves the American public, you know, basically creating a model where a servitude model where you have Trump at the top and you have all these people's agency heads below him who are 100% loyal to him only versus like actually executing the duties of their jobs. So, yeah, there's a lot to be concerned about with a lot of the policy pronouncements that have been made. And most of that hasn't really been outlined to the American people yet in a concise way. And there's still time for that.
And I guess this is why I'm so I'm not pro-Trump, even if it's like I'm coming off as pro-Trump. Why I'm trying to get everybody more Trump aware.
Right.
Because Trump's second term. Here's my theory. Trump has told everybody, I will do whatever you tell me to do.
No guardrails.
Here is the bargain for getting me elected. I've always been an empty vessel. I have no ideology. This is a sheer power exercise. So right now, what I think is happening, the power of a Trump second presidency is really up for whoever wants to buy it right now.
Yeah.
He's going to be a vessel that people, all kinds of people, get to pour power into that he's going to exercise. And if we don't start thinking about it in that way, we're going to lose. And if we lose, yeah, there's some serious changes going to happen to this country that I think people are going to be fundamentally uncomfortable with. But we have to stop. We have to stop thinking that the law cases are going to bring him down. We have to stop thinking he's damaged up himself. Yeah. That is not going to happen. And we've got to get more organized to put more of a resistance to this guy.
Another major fear is that he will be much more beholden to foreign powers. He is at a stage right now where he needs cash and needs it quickly. Rogue states, adversaries know this, countries that aren't necessarily allies know this, and you better believe that they will take advantage of that to exact concessions from him, from a candidate who needs money, who will be willing to make deals to help out these powers, which put us in a very dangerous place geopolitically.
Trump said it in New York when he was up there for the start of getting the date of this trial from Bragg. And he got the 500 reduced 175. A reporter asked him, "Would you go to a foreign country for that?" He said, "Yeah, I don't see where there's a problem with that.
Amazing.
I deal with foreign countries all the time in business. I don't see a problem with that."
And that is such an incredible break with norms. Yeah,
it's that. What I'm still stuck in is just how blatant Trump is now with what is widely seen. Well, let me restart this. Where I'm trying to link these two together, everything James Comer has been bitching about the Biden family about and trying to bring up over the last 3 years in this impeachment trial, Trump is doing the same thing just right out in public and not trying to hide it.
Yeah.
So it shows the difference between, number one, once you get a party behind you like Trump has, you can pretty much do carte blanche, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to slow him down.
There's no checks on him. Yeah.
There's no checks. There's no guard. Nobody's going to stand in the street, hold up their hand and say, stop. You can't. You simply can't do that. And the key is doing it in public. Trump does all
kinds. He's not hiding it.
He doesn't hide it. I think that's going to be one of the great lessons of the Trump presidency. As a candidate, if I'm as crooked as a dog's back leg, as my grandma used to say, well, I'll just bring that. That's just part of my brand now. You don't have to hide any of this.
No.
You don't have to do business behind under the table with China. You just do it right out in the open.
Out in the open, yeah.
As long as you've got the right set of party people behind you, you're cool. This is not going in a great place. What do you think? I've been thinking a lot about the demise of the Republican Party, too. What happens to the – because Lisa Murkowski, I think, came out this week and said, I don't know if
she
I'm
– She has no shoulder man of the party, yeah.
Anymore. I'm definitely not voting for Trump. I don't even not know I'm here. From coming from that world a little bit, knowing what is possible, what are the options for a group of Republicans that just aren't going to go along with MAGA, both if Trump wins and if Trump loses? What do you think the play is for that group? I like to call them your Chamber of Commerce Republicans.
Yeah.
What do they do if you wake up 2024 November and Trump is won election?
Well, and there's a couple of options, right? And I don't think they all move in lockstep. So I think what you see is you see them branch out into and make a couple of different decisions. You'll likely have a group that will, become Democrats and become moderating force on the Democratic Party and work within the constraints of the Democratic Party, seeing it as a pro-democracy governing party, whereas the GOP is not currently. And then you'll have a group that may say, we need to form a viable center-right alternative to Trump and attempt to do that. That comes with several pitfalls. Like, if you are going to have any success in that, you need to start from the bottom up. You can't start like at the presidential level. That's where No Labels is running into issues, trying to do that at presidential level.
Let me interrupt you because I got a question.
Yeah.
And this one you might know the answer to. I've been thinking about this for 2 weeks. Can you buy the Libertarian Party? Can you buy a political party
and use them as a vessel?
Why wouldn't?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have the infrastructure?
It would. Yeah. That's a great question. Co-opt them. And yeah. There'd probably have to be some changes because they have a couple of like out there positions.
We're talking everybody. It's all redone.
Yeah.
We just rename it. MAGA Lite, whatever you want to call it. But just take over one of those.
Yeah, because
parties.
They have the ballot access, they have the infrastructure, because it takes a lot to start a political party from scratch, to create that infrastructure out of whole cloth, because the system is so geared toward the two parties and it's so expensive and so time consuming. So that would make it a lot easier. So that's definitely an option. And then you start to work on the ground recruiting candidates for local, state, and federal office. You don't start with the presidency. You start below, and then you amass a presence at different levels of government, having elected office holders, and then you can, go towards the presidency and say, hey, I'm this. And the problem is we haven't seen a model operate that way. Mm-hmm. All of these models that come in, especially these third party and independents, they always start with the presidency. And so they start as a movement based around one person. And then when that one person loses or fizzles out, the whole thing evaporates. That's why you have to start at the ground level and build a bench. So then you have a viable party with leaders elected at different levels across various states.
Sure.
And then you have the infrastructure and mechanism to run a national campaign, but they never seem to do it. And so, again, that's why Third Labels has been an exercise in futility in many ways. Apparently, I don't know if you saw, they asked Chris Christie and he turned them down recently.
I think No Labels is only on 15, 16 states.
Something like that. And they still don't have a candidate. Jeff Duncan, the former lieutenant governor of Georgia, turned them down.
You're just going to embarrass yourself doing that.
Well, and so
doofus congressman.
Their latest play is, okay, we're, you know, because they first said that they could win enough electoral votes, and they were claiming we could win states like Delaware, like insane. They can't. So now they're saying, okay, we wouldn't be able to win the Electoral College outright, but we could win enough electoral votes to throw the vote into the House of Representatives.
For what purpose?
Well, and again, so that would, so the House of Representatives would pick the winner. Most likely Trump, based on the current, because it would be it's based on the current Congress, not the incoming. And why would you cause that chaos? That to completely delegitimizes the election, because then the vote of the people means nothing, because their vote is basically just overridden by Congress.
Yeah. So why would you want that? No labels. What I heard you just say is your best possible outcome is to produce an election result which would cause 50% of the people to lose complete confidence in any electoral.
You think people
process.
Don't have trust in our institutions now? That's Let it go to the House of Representatives. Yeah. Then you completely forego any
great plan
legitimacy.
There. No labels.
It is the most asinine idea that I've ever heard. And the fact that that's what they're riding on now is their pitch to get people to invest in this idea is just.
I hate to say
ridiculous.
This, but the whole system is set up for two parties. There's no place for a third party anywhere.
Yeah.
It's not a coalition government set up. It's if A you want, or it's B.
We are not like Europe or, you know, any of these other countries, multi-party democracies. To get to that point, you have to change the mechanism. You have to change the Electoral College to be based on popular vote or to be based on ranked choice voting. Yeah. Or, you know, you have to change the dynamics of how the elections take place. Then you can have multiple parties compete. But the way it exists today with winner takes all 270 votes Electoral College, the math doesn't work.
Robert Kennedy Jr. picked his vice presidential running mate this week. It was some gal whose name I have forgotten or just didn't bother to learn because it's irrelevant.
She's the ex-wife of the guy that co-founded Google.
That's what you really want to know. And apparently she's been funding all of Kennedy's campaign.
Yeah. So that's why she was picked, because she has the money.
I mean, I watched their their kickoff announcement. Started with some sort of Indian prayer to recognize the stolen Indian ground they were on. So obviously he's not tacking to Republican side.
He isn't, and he was at first. And so, yeah, is he going to just like, because that's a speculation now, is he's going to go just left to make a play for Biden's voters entirely? Because he has several policy positions that are attractive to Trump voters, the anti-vax stuff. For example, that, you know, his skepticism on Ukraine, there's a lot there that plays to Republicans.
So what I think what could happen with RFK is he's been on some CNN and MSNBC stuff recently that just hasn't ended well for him, where he says, I didn't say that. And they immediately pull up a clip of here it is, you saying this nine times.
Yeah. What was the crazy thing? Oh, the,
he never said vaccines aren't safe. And it's like, well, here you are saying the exact opposite. So
I thought he also made a statement about, the Connecticut school shooting.
It would be right in his wheelhouse.
Something that was Alex Jones like about it being a not real. What's the term I'm looking for? What's the conspiracy
what's
theory?
What's the damn thing? It's not the PSYOP. It's the false flag.
False flag operation. Yeah. Something like that. That was very despicable. And he basically said that he first denied and then said he doesn't believe it anymore. Something of that nature. But
I'm glad to see Kennedy's poll numbers are dipping down. When he first came in, he was at 15%. People thought, hey, could he get to 20?
Well, you and I thought those were artificially high. I mean, he wasn't going to remain at those levels.
He's 8 to 10 now. I think what will happen is the closer we get to the election, as he doesn't gain any traction because he's a lunatic, he will fall back on the things that are his strongest issues or what he's most comfortable, which is vax.
Yeah.
That will completely alienate most of the Democrats, and he'll pull more from Trump than anybody is my guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the end of the day, I don't think he has staying power as a viable national candidate. I mean, he's just too kooky.
Hey, RFK, if no one's here to hear a policy speech from you, you need to shout things like put Fauci in jail. That's what's going to fire folks up.
That's what gets
and eventually he'll deteriorate, I believe, into that, and he'll get 5 to 7%. He will be a factor possibly in some way, but I don't think it's going to be as big.
By the way, in our continuing discussions about the septuagenarian candidates, like, he's no spring chicken either. He's in his early 70s.
Yeah, but have you seen him with his shirt off?
No.
I'm surprised by that, Brandon. He takes his shirt off as much as he can. He's in really good shape, but he's in his
early 70s. So, again, it just speaks to the nature of, like, we can't younger people.
I know the voice is not his fault. I know that was caused
by a
vaccine.
Oh, it's so grating. I know.
But you can't listen to that.
No.
The president
Can you
of the
imagine
United States,
him as president having to listen to that day in, day out? No.
Biden is rough enough with his kind of lack of, bass in his voice. But, that's just not going to.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
That's going to turn people off, especially as we get into the campaign season. They start hearing him more and more.
He's another one. His campaign stuff, his whistle stops. I mean, you can see him trying to stay on track and seem normal. He can't get 10 to 15 minutes into them, and he's shouting about some conspiracy or some kooky ass something somewhere.
Well, and he can't stop running the controversy, like co-opting the JFK, famous 1960
just ridiculous
ad, like, as his own and all kinds of things. The latest thing was Cesar Chavez's family is upset with him for using the Chavez name and for running
there
on that and everything. And they're all supporting Biden. And they're like, we didn't give.
That's fantastic.
And they're considering legal action to stop him from, like, indicating basically that he's supported and endorsed by them when he's not. So
let's our last topic be this huge fundraiser that Biden and the Democrats just pulled off. Made more than $25 million for a 3-hour visit to New York. You had Clinton, Biden, Obama. I don't have a problem with those. It's just a standard presidential fundraiser, bringing in ex-popular ex-presidents. That's standard 101.
Yeah.
The dollar amount's a bit stunning that you could raise
it
that
is.
Much money in a
From
night.
From one event, one night, yeah. And but, I mean, part of it is it's very rare that you get all of the former presidents and current president on a stage or in the same venue anymore. So I think that's kind of a big draw. But it also, I think, helps the Biden team fight against this notion that there's no excitement or enthusiasm from the financial side for him, because clearly there is there. He has the ability to raise money. Like, that hasn't waned. If it had, believe me, that would be big news, and that would also feed into, some of the problems Biden's been having. But that's not the case. And granted, money doesn't do everything. It's not a guarantee that he can win the race. People who have been behind on fundraising and spending have still won races. But you'd much rather be the guy that has more money than less at the end of the day.
And if the Democrats win, it will be because of their ability to raise money as a party is still intact, while the Republicans have destroyed that for themselves.
Yeah.
And they have enough party infrastructure that they can turn money into results on the ground. We have, 18 offices open in Wisconsin now? We just opened 6 in North Carolina. Biden is raising enough money to fund the ground game, where
That's
we
smart.
Have a massive, massive lead over the Republicans.
By the way, again, I think that very much you don't see, we're far from the days of the 90s and early 2000s when multiple states were in play. But if you were the Biden team and you were going to make a play for one state you didn't win last time, it would be North Carolina.
Probably.
He lost North Carolina only by one percentage point, a little bit over a percentage point. It was neck and neck. The demographics of that state are changing a lot. There's a lot of younger people moving in from the Northeast, from other areas of the country. There's a big tech and healthcare hub there. And they have a marquee governor's race this year where they have a batshit crazy Republican running for governor.
He is a lunatic.
Against a Democrat who's, is he the state auditor? Or,
I think so.
He's already been elected statewide, the Democrat who's running. He's a normal person. So I think that puts a contrast there in terms of the biggest statewide race. And if Biden is able to make headway in any state, that would be one. If he has extra resources because of the cash flow to focus on North Carolina.
And if the Republicans have truly lost their ability to raise money and then to actualize that money into campaign activities that matter, they will lose in 2024.
Yeah.
And it feels like if that's not where they're at, they're danger close to losing all of their ability to actually pull off a national campaign in this current configuration that they're at. They can't raise the money. They don't have the people on the ground. If Biden wins, it will be the traditional Democratic infrastructure that wins it for him.
That wins at the end of the day, yeah.
I've heard also, too, one of the differences in campaign, Trump is everything online. Biden's nothing online. Everything the Biden campaign is doing is focusing on the ground, not online. So it feels like at times it's like, what's Biden doing? I don't see anything. I don't hear a lot. There's a lot of things that Trump will respond to, that he brings a great deal of energy to the response that Biden doesn't. The Democrats will win in November if they can pull off the same structural advantage that they had in 2020. And yeah. It certainly feels like that's possible.
And replicate that, yeah.
From your Republican friends, if you have any left that you still talk to, am I missing this? Has there been a huge infrastructure ballot chasing? All I hear is Trump still telling people, don't do that, no, vote only on election.
No, there hasn't. And again, this is part of the problem, and I don't think we've talked enough about this, is that so many of the state parties that would be the partners in that are now controlled by MAGA forces that have been chaotic and dysfunctional. Michigan had this like back and forth between dueling party chairs, you know, and they have zapped the Michigan Republican Party of any money. They have like nothing to start this year with, very far behind. Similar case in Arizona, where extremists are in charge of that party and have been trying to blacklist anybody who doesn't agree to the big lie. Wisconsin, their state party has been trying to impeach their long-serving speaker of their state house.
Yeah, they tried to impeach a Supreme Court judge that just got elected. They're a shit
This
show.
Is the Republican Speaker of the House they're trying to impeach for, you know, not continuing to go along with the big lie and for stopping the cases. So a lot of these state parties, including in Kansas, are controlled by MAGA people. A lot of the funding has been zapped. A lot of the fundraisers who I know who used to contribute back when you had normal party infrastructure and apparatuses are no longer giving to the party, so they're cash strapped. And that matters because on the Republican side, when it comes to having the on-the-ground forces, they don't have the unions to rely on. They don't have all of these different local organizations and groups. They rely on the state parties to do the get-out-the-vote campaigns. And much of these state parties that have been taken over by the hostile MAGA folks are not doing well. They're in disarray. They haven't been able to raise money. And they've marginalized the smart adults in the room, and they've just kind of wiped their hands clean. They're like, we're no longer participating. Unions, so it's a bad place to be in.
Unions are a great point. These are people that already have an organization structure. They're used to voting in a block. They provide, I mean, think of teachers,
yes,
firefighters, police officers,
and especially big in places like Michigan and in Nevada. Yes. And the Rust Belt. Yeah.
And if I understand Laura Trump's financial philosophy correctly, running the RNC, if Trump did an event and raised $26 million, or let's say the RNC did an event that raised $26 million, that first money all goes to the Trump campaign.
Yeah.
They will take out what they want, need, and if there's anything left over, they'll kick it back to the RNC. I think that's how she explained it.
That's exactly why. And that's why these legal cases are so detrimental to the party, because that it becomes a spigot, and that sucks out all of the money first.
Brandon, it's a 75-degree spring day at the Midwest here. It's Saturday. We're wrapping up. What are you going to do the rest of the day that's entertaining, exciting, and just, you know, better than what I'm going to do the rest of the day?
Well, I'm going to take my dog to the park because it's a perfect day for that. Yeah, and I don't know. I was thinking about, like, playing some pickleball later.
There you go.
That would be fun.
I mean, people are getting into pickleball.
They are. That's become, like, very
There's pro
intense.
Pickleball leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it's become like a whole phenomenon. Which
is Chicken and Pickle in the North, is that still the only big pickleball place?
Well, there's one in South Overland Park, too.
I think OP's got to have one by now.
Well, they have multiple. So there's Chicken and Pickle in South OP. There's also another place that has pickleball courts, like in North OP.
Okay, gotcha.
But I was at the Chicken and Pickle up north earlier this week for an IT networking event, and they actually had like a tournament and square off. Yeah. It was fun, and it was perfect because this was this Wednesday or Thursday? It was opening day of the Royals, but the weather was perfect.
Yeah. Brandon, I don't know if you know this, but white people love Thibs and Pickleball.
They do.
It's like the perfect suburban sport. You can play on mixed teams. Couples can play. It's exercise,
it's
but you're not like
up.
Sweating like a pig, and you can't sit down and eat some nachos after you're done. It's,
right.
Yeah. Pickleball is going to be here to stay.
It's going
to
stay for a while, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're just going to do some cooking tonight. You mentioned taking your dog for a walk. We got a new dog, and our new dog's been a real treat. So we've been spending a lot of time with her.
This is a puppy, right?
She was 8 months old when we got her.
Oh, okay.
She's about a year now. So, yeah, this is the first puppy-ish dog we've ever owned.
So you're not going to take her out for a walk or anything?
Brandon, she gets walked three times a day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Brandon, my philosophy about dogs is, and I take this from my mom, a dog is somebody who had a very, very terrible life, and then they get reincarnated as our dog. Because
Interesting.
It's like the greatest
way.
Gig you ever get. Food's great. You know, the beds are warm. It's always
perfect.
It's always a pretty good existence being our dog.
That's nice.
Do you follow Dave Portnoy from Barstool at all with his new dog, Miss Peaches?
No. I mean, I see some of his stuff every now and then, but nothing about his dog. I didn't know
about this. He adopted a pit bull out of Atlanta that was 6 years old. That was basically in a puppy mill.
Oh, okay.
So all this poor dog did all day was just get pregnant and breed other pit bulls. And Dave Portnoy is going overboard with this dog, but it's just amazing that this dog has 900,000 followers on Instagram.
Gosh.
He's like, this is the fastest rising star we've ever had is this dog. We'll end with this PSA on dogs. Apparently Miss Peaches ate gum and had to go to the hospital.
Ugh.
Gum has some chemical in it, Exolite or something. People online acted like, you know, you were a dumbass if you didn't know this, but I didn't know, but apparently gum is extremely toxic for dogs.
I figured it was bad. I didn't know how toxic it was, though, but yeah, I would have.
I've always heard chocolate.
Chocolate is, yeah.
But my friend had a beagle growing up on a farm named Cootie. Cootie ate a 5-pound chocolate rabbit one day and lived till he was like 24.
So this is what I figure out when it comes to chocolate, because my dog has gotten chocolate before and scared the heck out of me, and yeah. So I've had to quickly do online searches, like, what's going on? So Baker's chocolate is worse.
Okay.
So it depends on the type of chocolate. You know, so there are things that are just like the normal milk chocolate, which are not healthy, but it's not going to kill them if they just eat some of it.
Gotcha.
They'll be fine. They may have some stomach unrest and that's it. So it's all about the type of chocolate.
You know those big giant muffins you get at Costco?
Yeah.
We had a dog one time that broke into, ate six of them.
Oh my gosh.
And didn't throw up or like shit all over the place either. So we figured this dog has some sort of iron intestines too.
Probably. I feel like my dog does to a degree. I mean, he'll eat anything you give him, but he especially loves, you know, those little Biscoff cookies. They serve them on Delta flights.
Yeah.
I'll bring those back for him because he recognizes the package. He goes like crazy
really?
Over those.
Okay.
He loves those cookies.
Oh yeah.
So that's like his special treat. Like if I come back from traveling, I bring him some of those Biscoff cookies.
One day we're gonna have to talk about dogs are the new kids. And in some way that's a good thing, but in other ways that's not a good thing. But
yeah. Oh gosh, there's so much in research about how much people spend on their dogs now and how
and
like,
I'm as guilty
catering
as anybody.
To dogs. Yeah.
I catered our dog. Yeah. As my wife told me the other day, you've made a monster out of this dog because she gets whatever she wants. All right. We got to go walk our dogs. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.
Thanks for listening to 2 Men in the Middle. Make sure to give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our website at 2meninthemiddle.com. Drop us an email at 2meninthemiddle@gmail.com or tweet at us at 2meninthemiddle. We'll see you next week.